Hello everyone, it's James Bakken and welcome to the Notorious Banker Podcast. We got 27,000 plus strong on social media, 20,000 plus on TikTok at Notorious Banker, 3,200 plus at Bank Better Guy on Twitter, and 4,000 plus on Instagram at Notorious Banker. Of course, I am the author of High Risk Transaction, the Ryan Coogler Bank of America incident, now available on Amazon in Kindle and paperback format, and soon to be untitled Zelle book, which we'll talk about in this show. Guys, once again, thank you so very much for your love and support. I really do appreciate it. And we're getting towards the end of the hottest part of summer here in New Mexico, so you're not going to be hearing a desk fan during this podcast, I don't think. It was only 79 degrees yesterday. There was a little bit of rain, a lot of overcast. It was nice. It was 30 degrees cooler than what it could be in August, so I really appreciated that. It's going to hit the low 90s today, but it is still in the 80s as I recorded this, so I'm excited. But I'm still going to knock this out fast. It's been about 10 days since I recorded a podcast. I do appreciate your patience. As I mentioned, I am writing a book about Zelle, and that has consumed my entire life. And I actually took a day off from writing and everything yesterday because I had a horrible experience at Walgreens. And I don't want to, you know, dive deep into that. If you read my Twitter at BankBetterGuy, I shared with you a couple of thousand words of the incident that happened to me at Walgreens. In regards to just a simple store pickup, something that is meant to actually take, you know, less than a minute once you walk in the store. You say, hey, this is me. This is, I need my order. And they have it in a paper sack for you ready to go with a receipt. Except the only part of this story that was different than the 100 other times I did it was the associate lied to me, said that there were no more receipts. It was digital only. Whenever Walgreens app has a method of opting out a digital receipt to get a paper receipt. Now you may ask, why do I need a paper receipt? Well, it's none of your goddamn business either, but I need to keep books, keep records for taxes, for budgeting purposes. All these things matter to people. Why do people write paper checks? Because that's the way that they do it. I need a receipt for the things that I need a receipt for, and I requested as such on the app. So whenever an associate doesn't go by what I requested and then lies to me and tells me that it doesn't happen that way anymore, that's wrong. Couple that with a second associate, whenever I just kind of threw it out there like, hey, well, I won't pick up this order because I need a receipt, so I'll just go buy it, you know, with my own two hands and then get the paper receipt that way. Told me that I was not allowed to return my merchandise, and then also saying, well, I guess we can return it, but we can only give you store credit since you don't have a receipt, which is the reason why I was upset in the first place, because they couldn't give me a receipt and they didn't want to give me a receipt. So it turned into this 30-minute thing where I lose about $11 in rewards dollars from Walgreens total. I lose 30 minutes of my time. My wife was upset sitting in the car because she thought I was going to be in and out less than a minute. And it literally broke me. I couldn't focus on that night, and I couldn't focus the next day, so I took a day off. I got to tell you, it reaffirmed why I do the Notorious Banker, because that was just an $11 purchase for some pain-relieving cream, and I needed a paper receipt for my records. Imagine losing your house because of Wells Fargo or Bank of America. Imagine getting ripped off with Zelle because of Wells Fargo and Bank of America. Imagine all the things that happen because of big banks. And no one does anything about it. And then they kind of gaslight you and point the finger at you saying, well, no, it probably was your fault. I had that experience as a customer for the first time in many years yesterday, or 2 days ago now, at Walgreens. And I got to tell you, I am pro-employee. I am pro-worker. I say, hey, you know what? There are some people out there that do jobs that I couldn't do, and I can't do customer service in a place like Walgreens. It's too hard for me, okay? I was a bank manager. I dealt with kind of customer service on a high level, so I appreciate the employees that work at a place like that. But there's a difference between appreciating someone for the hard work that they do at a job that most people don't want to do, and then being able to criticize them for gaslighting the customer, and I use that word twice. I've never been one to use that word, but I'm using it twice. And secondarily, pretty much putting the blame of everything on the customer itself and being difficult to work with, interrupting whenever I had something to say, that was hard. And that was a lesson in what not to do with customer service, and frankly, it just reinforced the dedication I had to this job that I have right now, and that's to be a consumer advocate, customer service strategist, whatever you want to call it. The Notorious Banker mainly does bank stuff, but you know, all customer service issues are basically the same. It's like, you know what, the reason why managers are supposed to be there is to help the person not have a situation like that, and if they have a situation like that, how to fix it to make it not happen again. A manager means to manage. A manager doesn't mean to, you know, paint your own brushstrokes on it the way that you like. No, managers mean just make sure this fucker doesn't burn up, okay? That's pretty much what it means. And the third person who helped me in that scenario was kind of rough on me too. At the end, he kind of fixed it 80% where it should be. It still wasn't fixed all the way. I'm going to leave them a good survey review, but at the same time, I am escalating through Walgreens corporate as we speak. We can't let this go. That's all I got to say. I'm going to have a really short podcast because I got to get back to writing, but I want to talk about the book that I'm writing about Zelle. And, you know, just through random Twitter searching again, I found a PGA Tour professional, five-time winner of the PGA Tour, you know, millions in earnings. You know, you win a tournament in the PGA, you win $1 million instantly, you know, pretty much. So, you know, these people are really successful. This gentleman has a daughter who was impacted by Zelle. Now, I offered my services. I offered advice to them via Twitter. Haven't been in contact with them or anything. So, Bank of America, if you're hearing this, my paws are not on this. But I'm going to just kind of get to the tweet itself and then just let you guys know, hey, it's happening again. And this is why I'm writing a book, period, end of story. And I really think that you need to know this. And then secondarily, the branch that I worked at and was fired from here in Las Cruces, New Mexico, was mysteriously closed for over a week. And no one knows why. It was on our local, you know, community pages and all that. A lot of speculation, a lot of stuff was going on. I no longer have any colleagues that work in that building, but I'm going to just kind of give you a deep dive of why that mattered, why that bank being closed. For the inside, they had the drive up open, but I'll get to why that sucked as well. Why that is just really detrimental and demeaning to a community that needed them the most that week. So we'll get to that. It's going to be a really fun podcast, a really good one. Once again, thank you so much for kind of listening to this thing and hearing my rants about Walgreens all of a sudden. But we're working on that one, and we're talking about Zelle and Bank of America in the next segments, so please stick around. All right, I'm back with more Notorious Banker, everyone. So as you know, I've told you on several consecutive podcasts, and if you follow me on Twitter, at BankBetterGuy, you know that I'm writing a book about Zelle. And you know, I'm writing it, and it's really long. I can't believe how long it is. I just did a 6,500-word chapter about the banned things, the things that you can't do using Zelle. And, you know, my theory is I think that list is so long and so convoluted that it's almost entrapment. Like, it's almost meant to have someone who's probably not the, you know, the sharpest tool in the shed, you know, sends money to someone for weed or sends his ex-wife money for alimony, not realizing that alimony is one of the things that's banned from sending through Zelle, which is weird. You know, why are you going to send a huge chunk of money to someone unless it's for something? You know, unless it's for child support or alimony or to buy a big ticket item or for drugs or for rent. And I did a big soliloquy about rent and how people paying their rent to their roommates via Zelle is actually impacting them purchasing homes. So there's all these little things that I'm talking about. And I'm talking about it just through the eyes of a Zelle user, not just people who get scammed. I could do a whole book about people getting scammed and it would be 300 pages, I'm sure. But it's more along the lines of these are the reasons why I don't like Zelle. And this is why you shouldn't like Zelle either. And just little pointers. And the quintessential James Baca, James B. way, you know, that's what I used to call myself in my 20s, way of writing is kind of being an acerbic type person, like a George Carlin type, being a contrarian, being someone who asks questions. I remember long time ago, I was dating a lot of Christian girls, a lot of girls from this particular church. And, you know, I'm not a man of faith by any means. You know, it's something that just wasn't a part of my life. I was a little bit more harsh about that in my 20s, but in my 30s and coming into my 40s, I respect people who have faith, who have this this belief in something, because it seems to be, for the most part, to ground them and to make them better people. And I want to be a better person as much as the next person now. So I understand it now and I respect that more. But I remember that, you know, in my 20s, I would just have questions. You know, people would be talking about religion, Christianity, and whatnot. And I'd have just general questions, not trying to be an asshole or anything. Just like a question that someone who is educated just would kind of want to ask about what they're talking about. And I remember the pastor, who was kind of like a rough around the edges guy, says, James, you ask too many questions. Like, he said it so like fervently, like I offended him by asking these questions, and I just couldn't buy in 100% from what he's saying. And to me, that told me he was a bad salesperson at what he was doing, which was preaching, which kind of pushed me away from that a lot more, because anytime I had that, you know, I would make a point, well, you know, the Bible says this or whatever, and then he would just go off on a tangent. It's like, well, you know, if you go to Sonic and you say, hey, why did you put American cheese on my cheeseburger, not Swiss or whatever? Like, he would just kind of just shit on my points, and I would just hate it. I would just get so frustrated. And I got to tell you, it was literally a trying time in my 20s because of that very reason. So anyway, what was I getting at? Oh yeah, I ask a lot of questions. I'm posing a lot of these questions that not a lot of people have talked about. And I know a lot of people in the media haven't talked about. I know a lot of people on Twitter haven't talked about. It's just points about why Zelle is bad. Why it's a bad part of the experience for banking. Because it's going to underbank and unbank a hell of a lot of people through nefarious means. Or through the fact that, quote, people are going digital. And branches are going to be closed. Tellers are going to be laid off. It's scary. And I can see it coming a mile away just from my bank training. And of course, we've seen all the Zelle scams. I have recovered almost $3 million for people. Not all through Zelle, but Zelle was a huge part of it. You know, the same old song and dance. Bank of America, Wells Fargo, Chase, they say, hey, you know, we're here, zero liability guarantee. If you get fraud, let us know and we'll fix it. And then 2 months later, it's like, yeah, no, we think you sent that money, so we can't approve the claim, I'm sorry. Hundreds of millions of dollars lost through Zelle. And, you know, there's the fight battles on. I like to say that I'm near perfect with getting money back through Zelle, but I'm not. You know, we remember Jose a couple of years ago in Washington, D.C., an immigrant who came to this country with his mom after his dad passed away, got $3,000 stolen from Zelle. That was money that they were using for their legal paperwork to become legal American citizens. That money's gone, stolen through Zelle, Bank of America, because they see the name on the account being something that is not John Smith, I'll put it that way. Really didn't lift a finger to help this gentleman. A year and a half later, I helped a reporter with a $1,500 fraud issue. She got mugged, and they used her card at the Apple store. Within 24 hours, she got her money back. So that told me the inconsistencies right there. Caroline in Orlando, the Impact Wrestling makeup artist, you know, tens of thousands of dollars ripped off using Zelle. Bank of America says, we're not going to help anyone do anything like that. Big time wrestlers, people who make millions of dollars a year, tweet in support of her saying, hey, this happened to this person. She is the nicest person in the world. What the fuck, Bank of America? Bank of America goes, she's on the news. Yeah, we're not going to give her money back. So turn to August the 9th, 2022, my wedding anniversary, my 8th wedding anniversary, and 14th year together with my beautiful wife, Gabrielle, who I call Sweetness. Went to a movie, went to Walgreens, not the incident that I was talking about. It was another trip before that. I didn't see Twitter for the last 6 hours of the day, you know, on Tuesday. But Brian Gay, professional golfer, PGA Tour winner, 5-time PGA Tour winner, and according to his Twitter bio, an ambassador of Titleist, Diamond Resorts, Sentinel Spine, Top Golf, among other companies, University of Florida alum, $20+ million in career earnings. You know, it's not my business to talk about people's money. But this is a successful guy. This is a guy who has a good chunk of money, who has a sport, who's in a sport that pays him a good chunk of money. And what can I say? He is going to be an important customer to a bank. It doesn't matter what bank he walks in, says, I'd like to open an account, I'd like to do business with you. They would jump in 2 seconds to be in business with Brian Gay. Totally, 100%. So I see this tweet the next morning. It's because someone replied to his tweet, and I caught wind of it then. And this is what Brian said. He said, I am appalled at the way Bank of America has treated my daughter, McKinley Gay. She had her bank account hacked and had money, $3 signs, stolen from her by a scammer through Zelle. They have denied her request for her money back. I thought this is why banks are FDIC approved. So, you know, like I said, being the contrarian, being the person to correct things, I don't like to be the asshole that says, well, just so you know, this is that or whatever. But the last sentence is really important of what Brian said. He said, I thought this is why banks are FDIC approved. You see that little sticker when you open the door at the bank, you see the little sticker by every teller window. That's on purpose. That's compliance. If you don't see a sticker by a teller window, then that means that bank has failed their compliance and they're going to probably get written up next time they get an audit. So, you know, people say, well, you know, whenever they have their debit card stolen and the bank denies, it's like, well, I thought my money was insured. It's FDIC, $250,000, right? Wrong. FDIC insurance protects your money in the event of the bank going out of business. So if Bank of America just went out of business one day, the money that you had up to $250,000 is protected by the federal government, allegedly. You know, some will say that there's probably ways to weasel out of that for some companies or for the government themselves. I don't know. You know, there's not a lot of bank failures these days. So FDIC insurance conversations are not something that happen very, very often, or at least not in the time that I gave a crap about banks. But, you know, Brian's post there is something that, you know, he believes, and something that we all believe, bank customers and a lot of bank employees believe. This FDIC insurance means, you know, I'm covered. You know, someone rear-ends me, it's going to be paid for. No, someone rear-ends you, you're going to be rear-ended in the bank. Thousands of dollars lost through Zelle for his daughter. And so damn frustrating, man. It's so frustrating. He's from the same general area as Caroline in Orlando, who got ripped off of $17,000. And, you know, you go to the bank and say, hey, well, I thought I was protected by this. And then the bank says, no, you authorized it. You got, you know, you approved it on your online banking to send money to, and I'm just going to use Brian's daughter's name here, McKinleyGay@gmail.com. I hope to God that that's not her email address, but let's just say that it was that. Maybe she never set it up, or maybe someone hacked into her Gmail, was able to kind of get into their bank account, you know, use Zelle, and then make it look like she was sending money to herself, when in reality, she was siphoning that money to a crook. Well, not she, the crook was siphoning money to themselves. So, as I've mentioned before, I call it the Big Brother effect of Zelle, where, you know, if you're a younger sibling, and I'm not a younger sibling, I was the oldest by a long shot, but there's some big brothers, you know, big sisters, who would get their little brother or sister's hand and, like, flail it and hit their own kid, sister, kid, brother's head with their own hand and say, hey, quit hitting yourself, quit hitting yourself, quit hitting yourself. You know what I'm talking about. I don't have to visualize it for you to understand that. We've all had a bully, or we've been a bully like that, where you make it look like the person's doing it to themselves, and it's the ultimate demeaning behavior. That's what Bank of America does to people who are victims of Zelle. They know that the crime, the ruse, is for crooks to basically pretend to be you sending money to yourself, and in reality, they're sending it to another country, or they're sending it to someone who's going to use it for nefarious means. So the thing with that is, you know, Brian probably didn't know it, McKinley didn't know it, and his wife probably didn't know it until it happened to them. And I tell people this all the time whenever they tell me, oh, I've been at Bank of America 24 years and I've never had a problem. I've been at Wells Fargo for 12 years, I've never had a problem. I was like, that's good, because you're not supposed to have a problem when you're at a bank, okay? You're not supposed to have a problem when you're at McDonald's. You're not supposed to have a problem when you're at Walmart. But inevitably in life, there are hurdles, there are problems that happen. I judge people by how they handle the problem that occurs rather than tell me that nothing has happened. Because when you tell me that nothing has happened to me, I question that. Because I question that you've been told the whole truth with your bank account, or you've been told truth with your experience at McDonald's. Did the burger taste good at McDonald's? Was it delicious? You didn't have a problem with it because they didn't put mayo on there, you know, and you requested no mayo? Okay, that's fine. How do you know they didn't drop the patty on the ground? How do you know that there wasn't a dead cockroach when they dropped the patty? How do you know that they scraped off the cockroach, rinsed the little patty in water, and say, okay, yeah, no, this one's good. It was only on the ground for a second. You didn't see that part, so you didn't know that that happened. That's a problem. I would want someone handling a problem that I didn't see by fixing it before I knew that it was a problem. So when someone says, we don't have a problem at the bank, okay, that's cool, but other people do. That doesn't mean you can kind of quash what's going on with them because of the instance that you've been lucky that nothing has happened to you. Now, I don't know Brian or his family. I've heard of him. He's contemporaries with a golfer by the name of Rich Beam. And Rich Beam is an alumni of New Mexico State University, where my wife works. She's in academia. He's a member of the golf team there. And in a weird small world in tiny Socorro, New Mexico, where I was born and raised, Rich Beam won the Conrad Hilton Open in Socorro, New Mexico in the 90s. That was the local golf tournament that we had there. It was such a big deal in my little town. You know, it's just one of those little minor events where you probably win like $4,000 if you win it. But his colleague, Rich Beam, won that tournament. And every time I see Rich Beam on TV, I'm like, hey, New Mexico State University, hey, Socorro, New Mexico. So I'm familiar with these names. I'm familiar with these people in our world. Guys, it's happening to them too. That's why Zelle is a bad thing, okay? And a lot of you might be saying, well, they don't know that his daughter is the daughter of Brian Gay, 5-time PGA Tour winner. Yes, they do. Yes, they actually know this stuff. And I'll tell you why. And I'll leave it at that. Because, you know, I reached out to Brian. I reached out to Brian's wife. And just to give him some pointers, I didn't want to overstep. I just said, hey, I saw this. This is what I know. This is what I believe. And this is what you need to do. If they ask for assistance, then you know, God willing, I'll help them. But, you know, what goes on with preferred customers, and when I say preferred customers, I mean rich customers, okay? Customers that have a lot of money with a bank, they have this gravity in the banking world that anyone that associates with them is a preferred customer by proxy, in a sense. So, you know, I don't know anything about their daughter. I don't know anything necessarily about Brian, except for he's a PGA professional. But let's just say, theoretically, that they have a good chunk of money in a Bank of America account. And he opened up a little account with his daughter, you know, 15 years ago when she was a young girl. And that was her allowance money and so on and so forth. By osmosis, simply by just rubbing off his tour success in the PGA Tour, brings up her account because, you know, she's going to be under the preferred rewards banner, the platinum customer banner, and so forth through Bank of America. So when she turns 18, credit cards are going to pop up. Whenever she's 22, 23, they're going to say, hey, have you thought about buying a home? They know all this information because third-party data, third-party processing, you know, those things when they say, I don't want Bank of America to share my information. Well, they do, and they don't care if they get fined. And they don't want other banks sharing information. Well, the other banks do. They don't care if they get fined because all this information leads to intel that basically says, hey, we want this person to be a customer of ours because they're the person in this household or the household they live in, 123 Main Street, has a person in there who has $5 million in a bank account with, you know, another bank. And the whole goal is to try to poach them. The whole goal is to try to make them move to the bank and have them exclusive to you. So Bank of America knows who Brian and his daughter are. And they still made a decision to not help them. And it's ridiculous. It's beyond me. It's the same song and dance. It's the same tweet that I see every single day that happens. And I'm sure that they've done their research and seen that it happens to a lot of people. And you go, well, where do you go? Who do I speak to? Who do I complain to? Brian has a very good social media platform, but at the same time. At the same time, so does Zelle, so does Bank of America. They're going to say it's a one-time incident and we work hard to protect our customers, blah, blah, blah. All the same statements they put. It's bullshit. It's not right. She played the game the way that she was told to play it whenever something bad happens. And guess what? Bank of America denied her. They deny the request. I don't know how long it took, but generally it's 45 days. They string it out, and then they make it seem like you're too slow. Slow play, like in golf. You get penalized for slow play if you're holding up the tournament by you being as slow as molasses. Bank of America does slow play, and then day 45 comes around. They're like, oh, we don't have enough information from you. Well, you didn't ask for it. Well, I'm sorry. Our limitations are done. You're denied. That's what they do. That they do, and that's why I work hard to fight back with it. So I saw that, and it just reinforced why I'm doing my book, you know, because we're going to talk about the fraud part of it, okay? And we're going to talk about the protections or lack thereof that customers have. This is what we need to talk about here, and it takes Brian Gay, it takes Caroline, the Impact Wrestling person, it takes so many people to talk bad about it. We had Robert Flores, ESPN, former ESPN anchor, he works at MLB Network now. I talked to him briefly. Same shit happened to him, and Bank of America did nothing. It's literally, and yes, okay, the average Twitter person who works at B of A Help is not going to know who Brian Gay is, who's not going to know who Robert Flores is. They're not going to know these things, even if they have a verified check mark on their Twitter account. They're like, nah, sorry, there's nothing we can do. Can't help you, sorry. It takes a person, and I'm just using me as an example. Someone who recognizes, hey, you know, this customer is important. They have a daughter who's important to them. So by proxy, she's important too. And I know what you're thinking. To people who listen to this, they're like, you know, eat the rich and all that stuff. I don't want to hear that. If you're successful at what you do, whether it's golf, whether it's, you know, owning a series of convenience stores, or honestly, if you sell drugs and you make $1 million and you have $1 million in your bank account, a bank is going to want you. As crazy as it sounds, it's stupid. Because legitimate work, like being an athlete, being a computer programmer, being a cook, as long as you have that money, they don't care what you are. They just want to play with your money. But every bank wants to do that. You know, we say all banks are the same. Yeah, all banks are the same. But like I said, whenever you say you don't have a problem, okay, that's all well and good. But tell me how you do whenever you do have a problem. So all I can say is I really hope the best for Brian and his daughter and his family. Hopefully they get that fixed. Hopefully someone listened to them. If not, I'd be happy to offer my services as a notorious banker. It's important to me to let people know that they're not alone when it comes to situations like this. And I think people are starting to find that out slowly but surely about Zelle. But guys, I got to tell you, this book about Zelle is going to be interesting. As I mentioned, questioning, asking questions, telling stories, giving analogies, that's what I do. This book is funny. I'm trying to incorporate humor in it because what I've told you before is there's nothing more boring than a book about banks. You want to make it funny. You want to drop some F-bombs in there. You want to make it seem like it's something that someone should read. I can do that. I am skilled to do that, and I'm going to do that. So my Untitled Zelle book is coming up probably in the next month or so. Be on the lookout for that. I will have a link for that if and when that does come out. And I really hope to help precipitate change in the banking industry with a lot of fair points that I have. Questions that people would poo-poo me for need to be answered. So again, my best to Caroline, my best to Brian and his daughter. Hopefully Zelle is going to finally acquiesce and help these people out because they need to, okay? So we're going to end on one little brief topic after this brief roles consideration. The bank that I got fired from was mysteriously closed in the last week. And yeah, I understand what you're thinking already. Well, whenever something's closed for a week, we kind of know what that means in 2022, right? Yeah, okay, that's fine. But let me tell you why it's still impactful to my community. It's still impactful to thousands of people because of what they did. And what they didn't do for these people here. So I'll be right back with that. Please stick around. All right, my friends. Final segment of Notorious Banker is the Las Cruces, New Mexico, Tell Shore location of Bank of America. That place that I worked for 9 wonderful days in 2018 before I was summarily fired. 4 years ago, this coming week, I will be doing an anniversary podcast to commemorate what I call my Liberation Day and the birth of the Notorious Banker at that point. You know, I've mentioned before, I'm not bitter about that. I'm not. In fact, I am, like, glad in a way that it happened because it allowed me to help people the way that I'm good at helping people, which is with them off my fucking back. Without those fucking idiots off my fucking back. Excuse my language, but it's true. Bank of America impedes employees from helping customers the way that they truly need to be helped in lieu of sales. They want to deal with sales. They want to deal with making as much money as possible, but not assisting someone whenever there's a problem. And that's a problem to me. And I've proven time and time again since 2018 that I'm the best banker that they ever had, bar none. And there's no one who could tell me otherwise, okay? It's one of those things where, you know, no one's really a baseball fan anymore, right? But there's that player that you have. He can play second, third base, left field, right field, center field. He can catch. He was a catcher in high school, so he can kind of catch. And if, you know what, you need a relief pitcher because it's 22-1 and you don't want to burn a pitcher, he can throw an inning if you need him to. He's that all-around good guy. And they have that in football, too, a much more popular sport where you might have a dominant defensive player that never gets any sacks and never gets any interceptions or fumbles, but he run blocks in a way that can't be beat. He pass blocks in a way that can't be beat. And you'll always hear that announcer say, you know, this James Bacca, what you don't see in the stat sheets is the work ethic and the total, you know, 180 miles an hour attitude that he has whenever he's out there on the field. He gives it his all every play. He plays hurt and he still plays effectively. And you know what? He is dictating the way that the game is being played out there. That was me working in banking, my friends. I was good at what I did. I made every place that I went to better. I did have a lot of help. I did have a lot of good colleagues who made that happen as well. But at the same time, give credit where credit is due. Whenever something happens good at a place that you work at or something that you're experiencing, take the credit because you know what? Getting kudos from people are few and far between these days. But anyway, this location has changed a lot since I got fired here. They used to have 4 drive-through lanes. It got reduced to just 1, and it's basically just kind of like a merchant lane, you know, for businesses. In lieu of those 3 other lanes being closed down, they added 2 ATMs, so there's 3 ATMs total in the drive-through area, and a 4th one that is near the lobby doors, right there, that's up the stairs. So they have enough ATMs, you know, for a steady day, not an insanely busy day. Come to find out that according to Las Cruces Community Watch, a Facebook page that I hate follow because the people on there are so stupid, let me know that Bank of America was closed in the lobby all week, the first week of August, and people were just up in arms, like, what the fuck is going on? This is ridiculous. I need my money. I need to do this. I need to do that. You guys are impacting my life right now. Please open up. So people were saying, Bank of America is owned by the Chinese, so they're probably going out of business. Or, you know, Bank of America, blah, 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 January 6th, blah, blah, blah. Dude, shut up. I'm tired of that bullshit. Like, you can say a lot of dumb shit to me. Like, you know, Bank of America uses our overdraft fees for gigantic Christmas parties where they drink and laugh at us poor people. Dude, I can tell you some Christmas party stories at Bank of America that would make you go, are you fucking serious? What happened? Trust me on this, okay? Yeah, like you can say that. I'm fine with that. If that's what your belief is with the normal Bank of America branch, well, then I can't help you with that because that's what you think. I could tell you that it's wrong, though. But whenever you hear dumb bullshit, like, oh, Bank of America is secretly owned by the Chinese. Motherfucker, it's a publicly traded company. It is on the New York Stock Exchange. Type in BAC, Bank of America Corporation. I can go buy a share within 5 minutes from, you know, finishing this podcast right now. It's like $35 a share. I have $35. I'll buy a share. And I can say I am a stockholder of Bank of America. So does that mean that the Chinese, quote unquote, are owning Bank of America? Maybe there's some Chinese people who own, you know, parts of Bank of America in terms of shares. But that doesn't mean it's owned by them. Do you have no idea how the fucking stock market works? Do you even know what that means? I don't listen to people like that, and I don't comment to people like that. I can easily hate Bank of America for all the bullshit they do without you adding stupid shit on top of that. Period. End of story. But anyway, I saw all these comments, getting back to what I was talking about here. saying that it's closed, and I was upset. It's the first week of the month, and I've told you guys a million times, the first and the third of the month are the craziest days. The third is the craziest day. That's when a lot of people get Social Security disability, pension payments, a lot of retirement goes through then. It's a big day. The first is okay. The third is holy shit. On a busy third or a busy first Friday of the month, you could help 1,000 people in a branch. Every teller, if you had 4 or 5 of them, could have 200 to 300 transactions. The bankers can probably help 22 to 30 people each during the course of an 8-9 hour day. It is a lot. You are so tired from those days that it's just ridiculous. You can't function. I don't miss that part of it. With the lobby closed and only one drive-through lane, which means only one teller, because you can't have two tellers in one drive-through lane, because it doesn't work that way. It just doesn't work that way. I would say, theoretically, 80% of the customers are impacted. Now, I know what you're saying. Oh, if they have a debit card and they need to get money out, they can just go to the ATM, right? Okay, fair enough. For the people who can do ATM stuff, then they can go ahead and do that. The people who are afraid of debit cards, who don't want debit cards, who don't want to be forced to get debit cards, they're screwed. They have no way of getting this money out because they don't have that debit card. And most places discourage checks or don't allow checks anymore, so they don't want to do that. So, okay, so that is fine. But the people who do have ATM cards can get their money out if they really, really needed it, right? Yeah, until the money runs out. Let's just say that there's $700 $700 is the minimum Social Security payment. Let's say there's 1,000 people, $700,000. ATMs hold between $125,000 and $200,000 typically. There's 4 of them, so that's $800,000. Maybe some people need $1,500. Maybe some people need $100, but maybe some people need $1,000. Maybe some people need $800. I guarantee you those fucking ATMs ran out of money during the first of the month, much less the third. And Bank of America doesn't just say, hey, we're out of money. Can you come and stuff money? They don't have the money to stuff. They have to call an armored car service, and that costs money. And the banks can be like, oh, we don't want to be spending all this money. You know, people can use their debit cards. They could use online banking. They could pay their rent with Zelle. No, they can't. And they needed that money. So they don't order. So whenever the money is out and those things say out of service, you are unbanking people at that point in time. You are literally making it so hard for them to do anything that they're stuck and they can't pay their bills. And then what if they have a landlord that says, where the fuck's my money at? I'm going to evict your sorry ass if you don't give me the money by tomorrow. What are you going to say to them whenever they couldn't get their money out because the ATM was out of order and you were closed on the inside? Man, we are sorry for the inconvenience. We here at Bank of America humbly extend our apologies to you. Will you pay my $60 rent fee? Ma'am, unfortunately, we can't do that. That is not a bank fee, so that's not something we have control over. Fuck you. That is what I'm saying to people at Bank of America. I've had to say that shit to people before. It's the worst. It is the worst fucking feeling in the world. So, there was a big, gigantic dumpster. That is the Bank of America branch. But no, there is a big, gigantic dumpster next to the Bank of America branch. That looks like it's one of those things for, like, remodeling purposes. You know, like those big, gigantic ones that you see, like, on Hoarders. Okay, fair enough. They're remodeling. We remodeled many times when I was working at BFA. We never closed the branch for that. You know, we cordoned off places. They don't come here. Put plastic wrap on it or whatever. A lot of times Bank of America would reinstall furniture overnight. So by the time we'd go into the bank the next day, shit, everything would be brand new. It was like Restaurant Impossible, so it was doable. So I don't buy that for a second. Unless they're like tearing down freaking asbestos or some shit, that's not going to be the case. Then I heard people were out due to COVID, which probably makes a lot more sense because, as I mentioned, you know, what's the one reason why things were closed in the last 2 years? Typically, it's COVID-19. Okay, that's fine. Fair enough. Okay, so let's say that there's 7 employees there and 6 of them got sick. You need 2 employees in a bank to operate the bank for the day. I understand that. I'm not stupid. I work there. I work many days with a skeletal staff of 3 people whenever we should have had 8. It's happened in my life before. It sucks, but I've done it. Las Cruces is part of the El Paso market, the El Paso region. Who has some fucking doozies of managers over there? They're like the worst managers ever. we're always an outcast in Las Cruces. We were part of the El Paso region. Then we're part of like South Central Texas. Then we were part of the New Mexico region. Being part of your own home state's region sounds good, but the home office is 3 hours away. We didn't really know our bosses, and we really didn't interact with the branches in our state. To me, Las Cruces, New Mexico is Texas. We are part of Texas, and that's what their region is. And yes, I understand the first and third of the month are busy at all Bank of America branches. But you know what you do in those situations, and big city Bank of America's and Wells Fargo's do this all the time. You send someone to another branch. You say, you know what, James? I know we're going to be busy here at the Lee Trevino branch here in El Paso, but you know, Amador or Telstra in Las Cruces, they need your help. They need a teller because they can't open up. Everyone's sick with COVID. So I need you to get your, get your keys, lock up, end of day balance over here. And then we're going to send you over there and you're going to work a teller door for 3 hours. They do that. They did that in my town whenever we had two banks. It's doable. It's possible. It's wanting to be done. They didn't do it. Why? And I'm sure the reason is like, oh, it's so busy everywhere else. Well, over there too. And they're going to lose 80% of their customer base to bad reviews because they couldn't get their money. So this just leads me to my theory more than I really believe that Bank of America is going to leave my hometown pretty soon. Because if you don't give a fuck what 800 to 1,000 people think of your bank, by not letting them into the bank during the first couple of days of the month, then that tells me you don't give a shit. Because that's literally the only time that those people show up is the first part of the month. So that tells me that you're really not working for them, that you're really working for yourself, and you literally don't care if these people starve or can't pay rent or whatever. The branch manager there was my branch manager. The assistant manager there was a friend of mine and a former assistant manager of mine too. They are good at what they do in banking, but they are horrible when it comes to assertiveness and horrible when it comes to not speaking the truth. There's a tinge of phoniness to a lot of these people because they don't want to say out loud, hey, you guys have put our customers in a bad fucking pickle over here. They won't do that. They just won't do that. And that's the wrong part. That's the unethical part where I can't associate with these people anymore because they know the first and the third of the month people who need to go in. The people who are needy. There's people who go to the bank on the first. They go to fucking Walmart and buy a month's worth of groceries and other bullshit. They go pay their bills, and by the first at 5 p.m., they are done for the month, and they just chill out in their trailer, their fifth wheel, or their shitty house for the rest of the month, watch TV, and watch the weeds grow outside. You may not think that's an amazing existence. I don't think that's an amazing existence, but it's the existence of thousands of people in my community and a lot of retirement communities as well. So the fact that you're not showing them the courtesy to find a way to open up the branch, albeit maybe even for 2-3 hours a day during those times, shame on you, Bank of America. You're causing a lot of people to be impacted by your bullshit. Now, I understand if people get COVID, it's part of the situation we're in during these unprecedented times. Haven't said that in a while. Let's be frank here, though. You have contingencies because I've seen those fucking contingencies. I've been part of those contingencies wherever I was borrowed by another bank for the week because someone was sick or someone had to go away or whatever. You could have done it here, but you chose not to. You chose to alienate my community of Las Cruces, New Mexico, by not allowing them to get their own money out, especially these fixed-income people who make less than $10,000 a year, who don't have a debit card because they don't want it because they're old-timers, who don't have checks because everything is cash because they trust cash, and you, a bank, who is there to give cash. That's one of the fucking bullet points in your banking mission statement or whatever. You decide not to, and then you just said, oh, per our deposit agreement, we don't have to give you money. We just need to give you the opportunity to access it using a debit card or mobile banking, whatever. Fucking idiots. That's what's wrong with banking in a nutshell, my friends. So shout out to a lot of my former Las Cruces, New Mexico customers. They are all amazing. A big middle finger to the people who work at that branch, and especially to the El Paso market, the El Paso region of Bank of America, who is filled with a bunch of middle-aged fucking inept people who don't know what they're doing and who are making this community a lot worse by their actions. You can tell I was a little harsh right there, right? We're going to be back in 6 days with my Emancipation Day proclamation for the 4th anniversary of me being removed from Bank of America in the next podcast. You can go to @BankBetterGuy on Twitter, @NotoriousBanker on TikTok or Instagram. I am the author of High Risk Transaction, the Ryan Coogler Bank of America Incident, now available on Kindle format and paperback on Amazon, and author of the soon-to-be-released Untitled Zell book, so be on the lookout for that. That's going to be a lot of fun. I'm going to get to writing that after I eat some cold pizza for lunch here in a second. I'll be back in a few days, as I mentioned, with my anniversary podcast, but until we meet again, my friends, my name is James Baca, known professionally as the Notorious Banker, saying, don't use Zelle, be well, and Bank of America, you can fucking go to hell. Talk to you soon, everyone. Bye.